Continue. Okay, perfect. Thanks, Millie. Good evening, everyone. So I see that we have, it looks like 14 panelists and 6 attendees. And I first wanted to double check before we get started with John and Ramon to confirm about interpretation. So sorry, give me 1 second. I'd seen John earlier, but now I don't see him on the call. Do you, Millie?
Hannah, he was on for a minute and had to hop off, but said he would be back.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Liz. Okay, because I had not received confirmation from Ramon whether or not he would have somebody with him this evening or not. And so Rosa is here with us to provide interpretation. One, if either John or Ramon did not have that support, and then also during the public comment period, we anticipated if we need interpretation for that piece as well, Rosa is here to help us this evening. So thank you very much for being here. And then just as a welcome, we have on the agenda again to go through board introductions or board member introductions. And so I know that last time Monica was not with us. And so I do want to have that opportunity just to go through again. And if there are, just having had some reflections since the last time we met, if as well as your sort of name and affiliation, if you have any hope or question or aspiration that's new since last time we met for this group, whether those are, you know, questions or things that you hope that we'll tackle, just because we're going to you know, continually be adding to our agenda and work of this group as we go. So that'll be a continuing theme. But so tonight, as far as introductions, Monica, I could put you on the hot seat just since we didn't get to hear from you last time. And then I can go through people that I see on my screen and then the list, just call people out. So Monica.
Thank you for having me. My apology for not being able to make it for the first meeting. I don't have any questions. I kind of want to see what people have to say and, you know, go through the agenda and basically be more kind of listener today. And then if I have any questions or comments after all, then I will definitely go there. So thank you for having me.
Do you mind giving just a brief introduction as far as your interest in being a member of this group and maybe what brings you to have wanted to apply and be a part of this group?
Well, I'm originally from Poland. I came to the United States when I was 28 years old. And I didn't speak English in the beginning. I spoke different languages and I still do, but as I started learning the language and being able to communicate and learning about the culture, there were things that kind of alerted me, and the rights of immigrants and minority groups started being my basically primary interest. I went back to school and I am a mental health therapist, but when I was going through my BA, I was studying also immigration law here in Fairvin College at Western. And so I learned a lot at that time. I'm aware that we live next to the border. Pretty aware what's going on, and I keep my eyes and ears open on the situation, treatment for immigrants, treatment, behavior maybe of the protection groups. And so anyway, so I'm a part of the immigrant group, and I also help people who have issues with dealing with adjusting to this culture, or, you know, have partners or new families who are Americans and they have difficulties to assimilate and things like that. So thank you
so much, Monica. We're glad you're here. Let's see, Maria.
Okay, so my name is Maria Cortez, Maria Isabel Cortez, and I am interested in being part of this group because I'm also an immigrant myself. I immigrated to the United States about 20 years ago from Colombia. I have been living in Bellingham for the last 12 years. So the experiences that I have had as an immigrant are those that have kind of like guided or informed my path in my profession. I am a social studies teacher in the Mount Vernon School District. And also my experience as an immigrant is also what has informed my interest in my research. When I did my bachelor's in history here at Western, my thesis was on the care industry. So nannies and housekeepers that immigrate from other countries to the States. And then when I did my master's in teaching, I wrote about the discipline policies that schools have in place that often affect students of color the most. Yeah. And as a teacher now, I try to include in my curriculum culturally relevant narratives that are often excluded.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Maria. Yeah. And you're going to have to correct me because I've forgotten since last week. Ada or Ada?
It's Ada.
Ada, perfect.
So I'm originally from Bellingham. I moved away to go to school, but I grew up here. And most of my parents are immigrants. But I guess recently my interest is, I recently got my master's degree from the Thunderbird School of Global Management, which is very focused on international communication and inclusion. And I kind of just wanted to get more involved with my community. And, you know, I think Bellingham has kind of a silent history of why it is so white that, in, you know, we don't talk about it a lot, but I think that there have been, things in our past that hopefully we can readdress and have a better future that's a little bit more inclusive. So I don't know, I just kind of wanted to get involved. And I did want to say, kind of the only thing that I really want to talk about is, as far as the data that we've gotten, I think it's a great start. And I think the question to ask is what questions we want answered, and that will inform what kind of data that we end up looking for in the future. So, yeah, that's it.
Thank you for that, Ada. And that will be certainly additional discussion, I expect, tonight as well. So thank you for that. Let's see, I'm gonna go down the list here. John Zuniga. No sé si Marisol está allá para ayudar John con para hablar con nosotros.
Hola, buenas tardes. Saludos a todos.
Hi, everyone.
Soy John Zuniga y soy de Honduras. Llevo aproximadamente en este país 7 años ya.
My name is John Zuniga, and I'm from Honduras, and I've been in this country for about 7 years.
Okay.
That's it.
Entonces ya una pregunta más en conexión con este grupo. Hay preguntas o algo de interés específica que usted quiere que nosotros estamos haciendo?
No, hasta ahorita todo bien.
Yeah. Está bien, gracias.
Yeah, perfecto, gracias.
So, Liz, Darrow.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Liz Darrow. I work in legislative advocacy for community-to-community development. I was asked to apply to this board by our promotoras because one of the requirements of the board is that you have a Bellingham address, and a lot of the people who work in the field are in Skagit County. So I'm sort of sitting in as a person who can bring concerns from the farm workers and undocumented community to this board. I think that we have gotten off to a really good start. One thing I wanted to note is that Ramon has been pulled into emergency negotiations in Yakima, so he won't be here tonight. And I had asked him if he would feel comfortable just texting me a brief summary of anything that has come up for him. He's mostly been in Yakima County over the last 2 months doing that work. So I talked with Brian Heinrich, I believe is his name, the city attorney, and he said that the ordinance that we have doesn't address the issue of proxy, especially for Ramon and sometimes maybe John, because of work they may not be able to attend. And so we need to think as a group if we want to somehow revise that. And I'm not sure about, because I'm not an attorney, how that process would go. But I think it would be helpful, given that we only have two impacted community members working with us directly, if they could provide, for example, someone else from Familias Unidas, or you know, if Marisol could sit in for John if he has to work. So that's something that is not on the agenda for tonight, but maybe if we have time for new business, could do a vote. The other thing that I was asked to bring from the community is that the community is feeling really hopeful and encouraged about this board and the work that we've already so far done. One request is that we pay careful attention to any potential retaliation from law enforcement, because we did have, we made the decision last month to not have the police present in these meetings. And so we want to be really mindful if people are experiencing sort of that chilling factor from feeling maybe a little bit intimidated, or, you know, that I think that was really clear in the last meeting that, you know, John and Ramon and myself and a lot of people spoke to this idea that, because we want to move forward with honesty and integrity and openness in this group, that's why that request was made. And so just being really careful that people aren't impacted because of their participation in this board in other ways in the community, if that makes sense. So that's all I have. Thank you for having me here.
Thanks, Liz. And thanks for bringing that up. I'm optimistic. I'm appreciative of the fact that Chief Dahl didn't, you know, hesitate and responded to that, you know, request, and has not, I don't believe that he's online this evening as an attendee either, but to give understanding and appreciating the fact that, yes, integrity and making this a safe space to do the good work that needs to be done is of utmost importance. So thank you for revisiting that. And I will say, as a side, I mean, as an immigration attorney, this is of utmost importance to me, but also as a city council member, with the things that we're dealing with worldwide, but in our community as well, if and when there are ever concerns of any kind, I want to hear about that firsthand and personally. And so I hope that people feel that I'm approachable to bring those concerns forward. But if not, to try and to reach out and find other avenues. And I would hope that through this group, there's a group of advocates and allies that are formed, where the community looks to this group as really a voice. So thank you for bringing that up, Liz. Let's see. So Katie Winkleman.
That's great. And in the spirit of allyship, that's a lot of my background in terms of doing research about emotionally laden allyship and how that kind of affects advocacy and how we can best serve, people in our community. That's a lot of the research in my background in terms of organizational behavior and organizational psychology. And I do want to elevate and acknowledge what both Ada and Liz said. Completely agree. In order to kind of get this things moving, we're going to need, I think the data that we have is a great start. And again, coming from a research background of researching advocacy and allyship, I think it's nailing down that research question in terms of what we're really going to need to be able to answer that to serve our community the best. And also jumping off of Liz, again, you know, creating those allyship resources within our community, and also trying to protect those from kind of that chilling factor is really important. So yeah, and my background is born in Florida, moved all over the country, and then landed here to go to school. And yeah, I'm just really interested in this topic, just as it's really in line with a lot of the stuff that I've been researching for the past 4 years now. Done a lot of interviews with community members, and I'm just interested to seeing kind of those asks and needs from our community actualized through this advisory board.
Thanks, Katie. Danielle.
Hi, everybody. Just wanted to note the I is missing at the end of my name again. Not that big of a deal, but I am interested in this because I'm a social worker and I work a lot with immigrant clients. I think I mentioned last time that about half of my caseload are immigrant clients on purpose. And I too am an immigrant. I'm from Canada, so that's where a lot of my interest is.
Thank you. Rick Qualls.
Well, I appreciate being involved. I've been in the community for a long time, since 1972. So, and I pastor a church that I wish was more integrated. I wish had more representation from other ethnic groups. But for me, being able to sit with a lot of you that this is your profession and dealing with pieces of it that I don't get a chance to see from my side of it. So I'm looking to learn through the process and also trying to help my congregation be able to understand how we can help to integrate on a relational level, families or folks that are coming in that need a place to connect and the support that a faith-based community can offer outside of the professional world. So I appreciate the work that everybody's doing, and I'm looking forward for education.
Awesome. Thank you, Rick. Bridget.
Thank you. My name is Bridget Reeves, and I am grateful to be a part of this and participant, and looking to serve however I can. I myself have lived in Washington the majority of my life, and over about nearly 11 years now have worked at the Lighthouse Mission, and during my time there have worked a lot with people that come from a variety of different backgrounds. Some are immigrating, some have immigrated and are maybe in some semblance of process or on that spectrum somewhere. And some with a lot of fear about sharing pieces of that. And I just really have prompted from my faith and those experiences and getting to know people, I would love to make our community an even more hospitable and welcoming place for each person that comes here. And so, yeah, and I don't have anything else to add to what's already been said. I do think that something that Rick brought up in an email, I think, to the group about just the question of some of the past conversations that have been had about the purpose of the group and that sort of thing. It would be great to hear a little bit more about that. I think last time a few things came out, but it would be great to hear if there's more there. But I love what's already been said too. So thanks.
Wonderful. Thanks, Bridget. Yes, Rick's comment and question was on my list of things to address tonight as well. So thanks for the reminder. And I note that Seth Thomas is not, I have not seen him on the call. If that changes, certainly bring him in the fold. And then just to reach out to Liz again and stay in contact with Ramon, certainly if things come up, to please raise that voice. So thank you. And so with respect to the agenda, I'm going through, it says review and approval of agenda. I know that there are some amendments. We'd received some feedback from Liz after the agenda had been finalized, and some of those issues I think were incorporated in tonight's discussions. But as far as the agenda as it stands tonight, one of the other questions was about public comment and when that happens. So originally it was placed at the beginning of the meeting, and since we have about 8 attendees who signed up, I want to make sure to be respectful of people's time. If they were expecting to be able to comment at the beginning of the meeting and maybe couldn't stay for 2 hours, I'd like to at least make that offer for public comment now, and then at the end of the meeting we could open that up for public comment again if people have things they want to share in response to what's been discussed. Does that feel okay with everybody to double up on that public comment for tonight? And then we can discuss later going forward maybe what that would look like, but since it was already published that it would be at the beginning, I just want to provide that opportunity. Okay. So any changes to the agenda as it is? I know we only have 2 hours, so it's probably a lot to tackle, but hopefully a good start. And the minutes were sent out as well with attachment one. And we'd given some discussion to what minutes would look like. And in talking to Monet, since Monet's in charge of recording the minutes just as a service to this group, is not wanting the minutes to reflect or to not have the minutes try to word for word articulate what was said or presented by individuals, but more looking at the minutes as almost an outline of the discussion since the audio is available, and giving those time checks to the recording so that people can look at the minutes and sort of see what happened generally, and then they can go back and listen for themselves. Because I think it's a really delicate balance to try and write up sort of what people have said, and sometimes that doesn't come across maybe the, you know, the emotion or context as much as if you listen to it yourself. But I would like to get feedback from the group if there are opinions or feedback one way or the other about what you would like to see the minutes have, maybe if it's not included this time, or proposed changes. It's a work in progress, so we're open to criticism.
I mean, I think if we have the technology to record, just the main thing is to make sure we just have the minutes so that people can refer to it. That seems like the best thing to me.
Sounds good. Other comments? So any, we haven't gone through a formal organizational decision-making structure yet, but at this point, I guess I would ask if there are any objections to the minutes, and if hearing none, we will accept and approve the minutes as they were presented to the group via email. So I'm gonna look at the participant. I don't see any hands, so we're gonna move forward and accept those minutes as they were entered for the June 23rd meeting. And then that would bring us to public comment. So I'm gonna lean on Millie, who's our IT support for tonight, as well as whichever moderator from the city may be controlling behind the scenes, because I don't believe I have that power. But so we'd like to open it up now for public comment, and if any of the attendees who've joined us tonight would like an opportunity to speak. And we haven't formalized this either as far as a structure, but for instance, through city council, we usually cap comment at 3 minutes. I don't know if that feels too restrictive to people, or obviously, if someone's needing the help of an interpreter, I think then that time should obviously be extended to allow for that accommodation. But otherwise, roughly 3 minutes. I don't know if people have any strong opinions or feedback on that restriction. And we can play it by ear, you know, as we go forward. If that doesn't feel like it's sufficient, we can change that. But okay, so
Hannah, sorry to interrupt. I'm just curious if can the people who are participating in public see the chat, because that could be a place to give like a wrap it up please without interrupting. Or I'm just thinking like 3 minutes in general is a nice guideline, but I think the timer part of it, sometimes that can be, if anybody's done the public comment at the city council, it feels a little bit like you're just racing to get through your thoughts, you know. So I think I'd like to have a more inclusive and thorough process here if we can.
Mm-hmm. No, agreed. So we don't have to keep that to a time, but since I'm default sort of moderate at this point, and hopefully that will change at some point going forward. Yeah, I'm happy to try and delicately step in if something goes too long, but otherwise we don't have to time it formally. So that's fine. So
I have a question.
Yes.
So in terms of the public comments, are they confidential? Can people be assured that they their names or identity don't have to be necessarily out there for the everybody else?
That's a good question.
It's a good question. So this is a public meeting and the meetings will be recorded. So I think with that in mind, individuals who are coming forward to speak need to know that in advance. Obviously, I don't want anyone coming forward and speaking or providing public comment under false pretenses where then they've divulged something that was personal they feel puts them at risk in any way. So I do want to preface that it is a public meeting and public record. And I think there's pros and cons to that, obviously. Part of it's also wanting this to be a public dialogue and to have that accountability and transparency going forward as well. With respect to names, so one of the other pieces that's on the agenda for tonight is an Open Public Meetings Act training. So one of the issues from the legal department for us as a board is if you're hearing public comment from the community, then each of us have to go through this open meetings training in order to do that. And so since we obviously haven't completed that training yet, I'd asked the legal department, and they said you just have to complete the training within 90 days, I think, of the start of the group, and that we could still have public comment tonight, but through that training perhaps some of those issues would be raised. But otherwise, I don't know how people feel about having names shared, if that
the possibility exists to change your own name, like to the right of your photo. I would be supportive of members of the public changing that to anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
And or, I mean, there's no way for them to contact us as members of this board and have that remain private, because everything that we communicate about the board is subject to public disclosure. So I think people should know that, like maybe if we could announce that in all the languages that are relevant that we can tell. Before public comment. And also I think that in the process that we've been through in the past, the members of the community that have come forward have had very public interaction with their cases with immigration. Not saying that will always be the case, but I'm just saying that it's not always the case that people don't want to be identified.
Right. Certainly.
So I would be also for the anonymous comment if somebody requests it. I think that makes sense, especially because we have a group of people here who maybe don't want to be identified, and they may have firsthand experiences that are going to be important for our knowledge.
And so I will say, Bridget. Go ahead, Bridget.
Oh, okay. Thanks. I was also just going to mention in addition, I think, okay, can you hear me? Hello? Okay, you're good. Okay, so the I also agree that the anonymous piece, that could work. And then I also think it would be great to share out in our agenda or otherwise, if it's not already, I didn't specifically look today. If it's mentioned other ways that people could contribute comment, because I'm guessing similar to council meetings or other boards, you can also send in written comment, and people could do that differently as well. So if even on here it's not comfortable for somebody, then, or it's not safe, then in other avenues that it could be even safer or more comfortable for somebody. And so just making sure people know all their options, I think, is helpful. And then also knowing that whatever is written in for that, like, public comment or for a meeting, to make sure that people are aware that then that can become, that is public record. And so it can be put out. So, yeah, thanks.
Yeah, and just to absolutely second that, I think having multiple accessible access to public comment is really important in terms of you know, considering that this pandemic may not last forever, fingers crossed, you know, it could very well that this coincides with somebody who does shift work like myself, somebody who's deeply embedded in work where they may have to be in Olympia at a moment's notice to lobby as myself. I think it's really important to be able to submit public comment at a time that is also convenient for them, so that way we can increase accessibility for kind of the civic engagement. So I think that's a really important part of the process. So if there is a way that we can make that happen, and perhaps that can begin the public comments in terms of assigning someone to read out any public comments that we've received in the time between meetings, I think that may be a good way to not only offer an anonymous way, but also an accessible way for folks who have time conflicts, as, you know, we all live very diverse and interesting and vibrant lives. And so that means that not every week there's going to be a free day that they can spend 2 hours in a city council meeting or a advisory board meeting. So ditto, totally agree.
Agreed. And so on the immigration advisory board page that the city of Bellingham maintains, there's a roster list that has the members' names, but it doesn't share any contact information. I mean, internally within the city, there's a contact list, obviously, so that the city is able to communicate with each of you about meetings and agenda items and things of that sort. So one would be talking to IT at the city to develop sort of an immigration advisory board email account that people could submit things to, perhaps as well as a voicemail box where people could leave messages. The question is, how is that information then shared with the group, whether we want it then as messages come in, that then it's disseminated to all of us through our respective email boxes, and whether or not at some point people would feel comfortable having their contact information, you know, tied to that roster list, or I think initially without having people's consent would be to develop a, I don't want it to be too cold and unwelcoming though, to feel like, you know, there's this email out there and does it go into a black hole. But I think it would be great in the future to have, you know, to finalize with IT how we can expand that to have other avenues for people to provide comment. And if people were going to write to the city, I mean, I think if they address something to the Immigration Advisory Board, it would go to the mayor's office and then it would make its way to us. But we could formalize, you know, those directions as far as how that communication can take place, because absolutely it shouldn't have to happen just during these couple of hours once a month. So
a thought on that, if we were to do something like that with the email, they could be grouped together and sent to us when the agenda sent out for the next one, so we can prepare to have some answers.
Yeah, that would be great. Okay. Yeah,
I agree. And just to be also sensitive to folks who are waiting for public comment, this could potentially also be a conversation that takes place during kind of our organizational processes agenda item, if that's comfortable for people.
Yep, agreed.
Katie, I'm glad you brought that up. I'll just be really brief, but I think I emailed to you all. We can meet in the interim between meetings to do this sort of administrative stuff if folks are interested in focusing more on like the public issues in this public meeting. And that's totally kosher as long as we record it and are willing to provide it if people have questions.
Great. Thanks, Liz. Okay, so Millie, are you the one who's going to open up public comment?
Make that happen? Yeah, I'm happy to do that.
Thank you. So I don't know within like the attendee list, if people are able to raise their hands and indicate they want to speak, or if we should just go down the list, or because I don't know if some, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say the raise hand feature tends to work really well, and everyone should have the ability to raise their hand on the participant panel in the bar as an attendee. So if any attendees would like to speak, go ahead and raise your hand, please. I'm not seeing any at the moment. Let me just see. I'm going to briefly open the chat for attendees. So if you're having any difficulty using the raise hand feature, go ahead and feel free to chat with our panelists here to let us know.
Okay, and as we discussed earlier, we will revisit that at the end of the meeting as well. So if people have feedback they want to provide after the meeting's discussions, we'll make sure to make that an option at the end of the meeting as well.
Hannah, real quickly, and maybe give some folks more space if they're thinking through or trying to connect. I did get a response from Ramon. That's sort of what the direction and focus. A lot of people know Ramon Torres is the president of Familias Unidas por la Justicia. So he does worker organizing primarily as his work. So he's doing that right now, like I mentioned. His questions are, how will this board address racial profiling by law enforcement and how they sometimes cooperate with ICE? I think that also connects to Rick's question about where this board came from. It's been a almost 4-year effort now by members of the community to look into police oversight and the intersections of ICE, CBP, and police, because we do have, you know, being a border community, there's a lot more interaction with those offices. And then his final question was, is there a way to create an intersection between this board and the county sheriff? And that's probably a separate process with the county, but Hannah probably knows more about that. I did want to say, not to take up a lot of space, but when I was talking with Brian, and I think I emailed this to the group too, there is a tower on Seahome Hill where the fire department, CBP, ICE, the police department, the county sheriff all use that for their communication. And so I think this board might be interested in looking at the security of that information and how much overlap there might be since they're all using that same spot. The parks department maintains that, is my understanding. So maybe we could get a report from them about how they keep that information confidential and secure. Should be low-hanging fruit maybe for next time.
Great, thanks Liz. Yes, and the feedback from Ramon, I know that that is of interest, you know, to expand things to the county and to be able to have that collaboration and sort of to build on the work that will be done here. And so that is a vision for the future and trying to, I think, create a space and a model now of, you know, starting in, with the city and then hopefully being able to invite, you know, the county to the table and encouraging them to form a similar type of advisory board that would be countywide. So okay, so I don't see any hands raised by attendees, but I want to thank the attendees for tuning in and listening tonight. And also to feel free to, like Millie said, to use the chat function or to raise your hand, and we will revisit public comment at the end of the meeting as well. So going forward with board setup, I don't want to, again, take up too much time during this meeting for logistics, but it sounds as though in reaching out to all of the board members individually that Tuesdays, either the first, second, or third Tuesday of the month seems to work for everyone. So if anyone has a strong preference between the first, second, or third Tuesday, let us know, and otherwise, we might roll a die or something and figure out, you know, what works best with other calendars that we're trying to juggle within the city. But so that will be coming forward, and we will set up then a regular meeting schedule where we can count on it being the, you know, whatever Tuesday of the month. So that will be coming forward then. And as far as organizational structure and decision making, I know that Katie had reached out and I didn't have a chance to respond, but I did want to open that up to the group if there were, since our last meeting, if there were recommendations regarding that structure and how we would make sort of decisions as a body, or, you know, hold meetings. So one of the things in making voices, you know, a space where all voices can be heard, I think one of the sort of informal rules that we have on council and those meetings and committees is that everybody gets a chance to speak before somebody speaks again. Again, sometimes nobody else has anything to say, and so one person gets to continue on with the other things on their list. But I think in a group like this too, where maybe not everybody is, you know, is sort of trying to dominate that conversation, you know, and especially with John and Ramon and wanting to make sure that people are encouraged to, you know, to speak up. And sometimes you have to make sure that that space is available because they're not going to interject on their own. So, and not calling out them particularly, just humans in general. We're all different in that space. So any formal proposals or requests to the group as far as what that organizational structure would look like?
I think Monica wants to speak.
I have a question because I didn't look, I didn't see anything connected to, do we have identification of how many different groups we have of immigrants here in our county and our city? And, you know, it's kind of, I collaborated with C2C in the past, but we know that the larger groups must be Hispanic, but I don't know right now. And in terms of level of need or help, you know, which group, and how are we gonna connect with these groups, or want to let them know, different groups of immigrants, how we can help them or hear them or things like that. So that, I guess that's several different questions, but maybe you can help me out.
Thanks, Monica. So I think that is another level to the organization, like how does the group handle outreach and communication to the public about what this board is working on and what's going on. So that's a key piece of that structure as well. And as far as I think the one big question first off is about how to make decisions, right? I think about, for instance, just as an example, hypothetical, where a group has come forward, right, with a resolution to welcome refugees that was provided as an agenda item for the last meeting. And whether or not that gets taken up by the board is completely up to this group. But if we did take it up for discussion, then how do we decide? Is this something that as a board we want to support and maybe pass on to council for a formal vote and adoption by the city? Or even as far as, I don't know, maybe it would be a request for data or something from the city, or, I mean, do we need any sort of consensus within a group, and how would consensus work? Do we need everybody to agree? Do we just want a simple majority to agree? But how will, whenever you have a group of people with different opinions and different views, you know, how will we make those decisions in a respectful way where we feel like everybody's, you know, been a part of that process and feels comfortable then moving forward. I think it's important to be open for disagreement and open for, you know, emotion and tension. And I would hope that we don't always agree on everything. I mean, I hope that we do agree on a lot of things, but I want this to be a place, right, where different opinions can be voiced, and then people are still going to want to come back to the next meeting and continue those conversations, even if what they presented wasn't maybe adopted by the full group. And so I'm new to all this and running a meeting, and so wanting to really be respectful of the different views that are being brought to this board in trying to figure out, you know, culturally there could be different considerations as well as far as what feels good to people, as you know, as far as decision making. So I've rambled on extensively, so I would like someone else to if people have other things to add or suggest. Katie, I know that you had.
Yeah, just to jump in there, I know last meeting I pushed a little bit on Robert's rules, and that's just predominantly because, again, in my research brain, looking at a lot of peer-reviewed studies, Robert's rules tends to yield honestly pretty crappy outcomes, if we're being honest, in terms of how we actually approach and solve problems, in terms of how group dynamics work, which is, you know, what my previous life was before I got into allyship research in terms of group dynamics and leadership. So when we examine Robert's rules effectiveness, is that if that is something that feels very comfortable and energizing for somebody to use, we absolutely can use that. What has been proposed by a large body of research, as well as myself, and I'm just dropping a link here in the chat to a general overview of it, is consensus-based problem solving, which is essentially just a problem solving tool that we can use to run meetings. Robert's rules of order is more of a, how do we get from hour one of a meeting to hour two of a meeting and move through agenda items, which is helpful, and we can incorporate those norms into this. But I think norming around what consensus-based problem solving really looks like for this group is going to be really important in terms of like the name of progress and making sure that we are actually achieving the goals that we want to achieve. Additionally, Robert's rules of order often calls for a simple majority, which in my personal view is what has caused bipartisanship in this country, which has caused so much divide. And so I think in a more consensus building approach, we're able to address all facets of a problem and not just the lesser of two evils. And so kind of like the first section, section three is the largest section, just as a fair warning. I know it does say that this document is 8 pages, but the third section is just really norming around what does it mean to actually be consensus-based and what problems might we face in that. But the first one is just essentially saying that proposed agenda items would come with a general summary of what is the conflict, why are we proposing this agenda. It really doesn't have to be that long, and we can norm around how long we'd like it to be. I suggested 100 to 200 words, as that is less than half a page single-spaced, about a half a page double-spaced. It's pretty simple, just essentially 5 sentences explaining what the issue is and what needs to be solved and answered, as well as identification of key stakeholders, both within our group as well as outside of the group, and key recommendations for us to consider in terms of what we actually need to be examining in this problem to help guide our discussion. And then as well as clarifying responsibilities in the discussion in terms of assigning a facilitator, I said likely Hannah Stone, as Hannah has taken on this role, a recorder, which city appointed employees have taken on in terms of releasing meeting minutes, and then a mediator, which would be whoever volunteers to kind of be a facilitator for the specific agenda item. So going from kind of the facilitator who facilitates the entire meeting to the mediator who mediates this very specific agenda topic, and then setting expectations and norms for observers within the group. And this is where we can kind of incorporate Robert's rules of orders in terms of assigning, okay, this person would like to speak on this topic, this person would like to interject, creating a speaker list beforehand, or even in the chat as we're talking. And when we're in person, potentially just having signups before the meeting. And then moving down to kind of section three, this is more just kind of norms and expectations. So kind of what it means to construct consensus-based agreements amongst the group. So not trading interests for relationships, engaging in active listening, disagreeing without being disagreeable. A colleague of mine used to say, strong convictions loosely held. So you're willing to stand your ground, but you're also willing to be movable in terms of saying, this is what I'm willing to negotiate on and this is what I'm not willing. They need to be possible, strive the intent for options for mutual gain, emphasize packaging, et cetera. And there are quite a few clauses in here, which goes down for a while. And then section four is deciding. Again, this is where we can start to incorporate Robert's rules in terms of saying our decision-making process is dictated by a 90% majority, an 80% majority. However, we would like to structure that would feel energizing and inclusive. And then again, five, committing on a final agreement to your own name. So Basically just being able to sign your name to something and being able to say, you know, maybe I was in the 20% that disagreed, but I'm willing to sign on to this and say, you know, this is our solution as a team. And then kind of the last part is just potential barriers. However, I do recognize that both of these structures were constructed by white males who likely had colonial biases. And so I'm totally open to amending or deleting any of these. These are all just purely constructive things that I have seen work and whatnot. So that's really all I have to say. And we can also move this to a discussion kind of offline via email, kind of processing. I know that's it's a large document to try to process out loud with. And so if that would feel comfortable for people to move that online to email to review and say, okay, this is what I'm comfortable with, this is what I'm not. And then in the next meeting, starting to norm around sections 2 and 4 in terms of what would making a decision look like and what would roles in each agenda specific item look like. We can move that to discussion, but yeah, folks would like that time and space to process. I'm totally willing to offer that. And this is purely just suggestion, what I have personally seen work in committee work. So yeah, that's my spiel.
Thanks, Katie. Yeah, if that, I know you put the link in the chat, but I don't know about copy and pasting, if that could be shared by email with the group, I think that would be great. Liz, I also want to ask, since you have Ramon's ear, but I know that he's busy. Obviously, he does a lot of organizing, as well as you through C2C and sort of that grassroots organizing. If there's any thoughts or suggestions that you have for this group as far as structure.
Yeah, and I also wanted to mention that John and Marisol are leadership in Read Relief to Reunite Families. So we kind of come from this perspective of undocumented and detained folks, which is kind of funny because I'm sitting here as the white representative of that. But hopefully having that trust that if they've asked me to bring something, that's a part of a group process. I think both with Read Relief, well, FUJ and Read Relief to Reunite Families and Community to Community Development really strive to be a process-based, people-based, the way that we work is non-hierarchical and non-patriarchal. So we have a lot of women in the room. I think that's great. We have a couple of impacted community members in the room. I think my strong preference, and I think Ramon spoke to this last time too, is that we move forward as a group of people without hierarchical leadership. So that would look like rotating facilitators. It would look like an agreement that we have. I agree with Katie, like a strong majority would be really important, because if one of the 15 of us disagreeing is more impacted than others, I feel like that should be weighted in their favor. So that's how I feel. And I think that document is so great. Thank you for sharing that, Katie. I think it's great to just read through those ideas and how and why decisions sometimes get made that leave people out. So even though it's a lot slower, to be honest with you, the work that we do with community to community development, our meetings are really long and progress is slower than people would like. I think it's so important to make sure that no one's getting left out. So, and Hannah brought up the example of the Welcome the Immigrant. Was it a referendum that someone had brought? And the reason that I object to things like that is because it's not action oriented. And I think this group should be very much about what is the data, what is the recommendation, and then making sure that people's voices are being heard. But a referendum that welcomes the refugee doesn't protect the refugee from detention or deportation. So it's kind of meaningless in the context of this work that we're doing. So I think a lot of times you would expect C2C or FUJ or Raid Relief to be sort of objecting to things, but it isn't from a place of wanting conflict. It's just, let's make sure we bring up all the things that might impact people and not just say everyone is welcome here, because that's not, you know, it doesn't do anything for the community members who are counting on us to improve safety in this community. That's why we're here. So that's my 2 cents about that. So I guess in a nutshell, because that was a lot of words, not having a chair, vice chair, or fixed facilitator, I think would be the best case scenario. Like maybe we could just go down the list and say, I mean, I have 10 meetings left after this. I think the people who are only appointed for a year maybe would facilitate first just to make sure they get a chance to. But in terms of the 2-year appointees, we could just sort of randomize And then if someone feels strongly they don't want to facilitate, I'm supportive of that too. I want to be flexible, but I think we can do this without having bosses. That'd be my preference.
That sounds great. Do Marisol, does John or you have anything to add with respect to this discussion?
No, está bien así todo.
Nope, we're just listening and trying to keep up with translating.
And thank you for that, Marisol. I know that that is exhausting, and we're all speaking quickly. So thank you for taking that on. And I will address that issue separately, interpretation, but keep that in the back of my mind. I completely support rotating facilitators. I did want, on a housekeeping point, just mention that I did formally reach out to Dan Hamill because he's currently the city council member who chairs the Public Health, Safety, and Justice Committee, who was identified in the ordinance to be the liaison to this committee. And so I'd reached out to him expressing that the board was requesting that I sit as that liaison instead of him, and there was no objection. So I will stay as the liaison to council, but in no way feel any role in this group other than to listen. So I am happy to pass on the facilitation role and to share that with others. So I'm excited about that. I would propose then that we take some time. It seems as though there's some consensus about working on a consensus basis. So to sort of leave that fluid, and I will reach out to legal just to make sure there's nothing that, as a public entity, that we're gonna get ourselves in trouble with, that needs to be formalized. But otherwise, I am hopeful that that feels good to everybody. And if not, to certainly reach out either in this public meeting, or if you don't feel comfortable doing so, through email or phone after the meeting. And so we will kick that one down the road a little bit, but we get to scratch off leadership positions. I think it's great to say that everyone on this board is sort of on equal footing, but also what Liz mentioned about, obviously depending on the issue at hand, people are coming from different perspectives and bringing different experience to the table. And so having that weighted based on the issue feels, profound to me. So I think that's a good fit. The need for this Open Public Meeting Act training is something that we could either set time aside during a meeting to do that collectively as a group. There's like a PowerPoint that we can go through together. The one advantage to that, I thought, was that collectively we could ask questions and sort of navigate that on our own, as a group. Otherwise, the links and information can be sent out to everybody to just do that on their own when they have time and space to go through that. It's really just about the obligations as, a public group, having public comment, and also just holding public meetings. So it's sort of the nuts and bolts of that.
I'm just curious how everyone feels about having interim work sessions like we talked about, because that seems like it could be something done in the biweekly timeframe in between, but I don't know if the group feels like that would be doable for a majority. Like, first of all, if in 2 weeks we met to do the work session for the next meeting, which will be the public sort of explanation of the work that we're doing.
I personally would be open to that. And I think for purposes of this training, it might be helpful to do it on our own time and then just take 15 minutes in the agenda to address any questions as a group.
Okay. And we are working on making, getting the PowerPoint translated into Spanish, because there was also a video and a PowerPoint, different options. So I'm trying to make those available in multiple languages, and then we'll send that out to all of you. So, okay, that sounds good. Just to give you a heads up, we just have to have it completed within 90 days. So we still have at least another month before that gets checked off on the list.
So I have a question.
Yes.
You said, Hannah, that the PowerPoint will be translated to other languages. So kind of following my previous question is, how many groups we're going to address? Because somebody said earlier, each different immigrant group has different needs and different, requests maybe, or questions. Mm-hmm. How do we know that these people from this different non-Hispanic, maybe Eastern European or Asian groups gonna be connected, or how do they know that we have this thing for them, or we have this group that they can help them or listen to them?
Thanks, Monica. So with respect to the training for the Open Meeting, Public Meeting Act, that is only being provided in the languages needed by this board. And so I would encourage anybody, if there are other languages that board members would feel more comfortable reviewing that material in other than English or Spanish, to please let us know, because the city is committed to providing those materials in whatever language is needed to facilitate the work of this group. With respect to our outreach and the publication of board materials on the website for the public to consume, we're starting with English and Spanish, and they're saying that they can make those materials available in other languages upon request. But I think the hope is that that list of languages will be growing sort of, you know, naturally, either from this group expressing interest or desire to have them available, or looking at, again, the population of Bellingham and the languages, you know, spoken most often, which we can get that data most easiest from the school district. So the hope is that Spanish is only the beginning, and that there would be other languages, you know, provided. So if there is a priority for the next language as those contracts continue to be developed, to certainly voice that. Yeah, Ada.
And I think that's one of the things that we should talk about, maybe probably at a different meeting, but just what outreach looks like and how we want to make different communities aware that we're there and that we want them involved. And it's a conversation that we haven't had yet, but that's, you know, it's another conversation. We should have it.
I agree wholeheartedly. So we will add that to the agenda for the next meeting, because I think that is a bigger conversation, but something that definitely should be discussed. So with respect to interpretation, I just want to cover what, Janice, who is helping to organize this from the mayor's office, and myself and Monet have been talking about what the needs were, and identifying three as far as, so interpretation to ensure that board members can all fully participate in this process. So that's of top priority. Then interpretation to ensure that members of the public can speak, right, and be heard at public comment periods. So making sure that those language needs are addressed so that if people come to public comment, they're able to communicate with the board. And then the third one was interpretation, so that members of the public can listen and understand what's happening. So whether the audio recorded transcripts of the meeting are, you know, transcribed and then in multiple languages, or if there are subtitles, you know, if there ends up being video or, but those were sort of the three, right? The internal communication among board members themselves, members of the public who want to communicate through public comment, and then members of the public who maybe don't want to come and speak directly to the board, but they want to be able to review what's happening and those materials. Are there other needs with respect to interpretation or translation that the group sees that we have overlooked? I mean, obviously there will be more, but to start with, we have three to start with.
I think that when we make our recommendations to City Council, because the ordinance is written to identify holes in the justice system as it relates to immigration, so that covers all immigrants, but the majority of the problems that we have been aware of that led to the drafting of the ordinance had to do with racial profiling and people who are not white. So while people immigrate from all over the place, I think the data that we're looking at, there's I think there should be strong questions around racial equity to start with. And then the recommendations that we provide to the city council ideally would be, I mean, that data you were talking about, Hannah, about who are the language speakers who would be most impacted by these recommendations, and making sure, you know, there's probably at least 5 or 6 languages that aren't English that represent a big population of our community. So I think when we get ready to make our recommendations, that's going to be a time to be very aware of the different people who might want to read that information and respond to it.
Agreed. So at having the public meeting pieces sort of checked off and being not much, but a little bit ahead of schedule with respect to the agenda, I wanted to take some time to address Rick's question that he sent out by email. And perhaps Liz may be the one to head that off, but to have a brief discussion overview about how this group came to fruition. And I was not involved in the work from the beginning as a council member, and was not on the, you know, council at the time that most of this work was done. So I think that background, though, as Rick indicated, would be beneficial to the group. I don't know if that puts you on the spot, Liz, or if John or Marisol would also want to speak to that. But
I'm happy to provide the context that I have. And that is, first of all, to apologize for dominating a lot of this space. I think for the last almost 4 years, the majority of my work has been around getting the City of Bellingham to recognize and sort of grapple with the problems that they have around racial equity, and particularly with farm workers and undocumented people. And so Hannah was really instrumental in helping us get an ordinance drafted and passed after she was appointed to City Council in 2018. Is that right, Hannah? We also had in August of 2018 a major ICE raid in Whatcom County, which is how John and I met, because he was detained for 5 months in Tacoma. So the work is about an ordinance that was passed shortly after the last presidential election that was a sort of welcome the refugee type ordinance. It talks about whereas everyone is welcome here, whereas we want people to feel comfortable here, you know, all true statements, but no action. Community to community felt strongly that there should be actionable things attached to that legislation in terms of police oversight and really getting this data about how RCBP and ICE and the police overlapping, and how are we failing people like John and the other, was it 13 people who were detained in that raid? That shouldn't be happening and puts families at risk. So that was the foundational idea, and community to community with the leadership of Brenda Bentley, who is the artivist and direct action sort of coordinator for community to community, started having vigils weekly in front of City Hall and then alternating at the bus station. And the idea was, we wanted oversight, we wanted to look into why we weren't having that conversation openly with City Council, and different council members engaged with us in different ways. And Hannah happened to be someone who community to community development had already been working with, just as a person who was supportive of what we do, and also because she's an immigration attorney and speaks fluent Spanish. So those are all assets that are hugely beneficial to the farm workers and undocumented people that we work with. So we already had that context with Hannah. We didn't have to start over with her. And so I believe it was Hannah and Maureen Darris and myself and Brenda Bentley and Rosalind Guillen, all being leadership in community to community, who sat down and kind of drafted out what would a better ordinance look like. And then that is the ordinance that brought this committee together, which was passed in November of 2019. Time is moving really weirdly now. I'm like, what year is it? Anyway, so then we had COVID and we got stalled. But the idea behind the ordinance was for this group to actively look at all of the ways that community members are put at risk, specifically for detention and deportation, but also, you know, every city office has policies around how they interact with law enforcement. And if they don't, especially with the Keep Washington Families Working Act being passed, which Hannah noted is not really enforceable in the ways that would be helpful, but it is kind of a guideline of like, what are the policies of departments and how can we strengthen them so that in this city, and ideally, hopefully soon in the county, we can actually say that everyone is welcome here and the safety of individuals is taken seriously by the city offices, regardless of country of origin or documentation status. So that's the whole story. So here we are. And I think really staying action focused is going to help people who might feel like this is a lot of white, wealthy people in a room talking. You know, we don't want to do work that isn't work for people who are impacted by immigration policy. So, I mean, I don't know what we want. That's what I want. I want to do something that directly impacts the people whose safety is right now seriously at risk by not having looked at these things. So in that way, it really is like the overlap of policing and monitoring, surveilling, detaining. Those things are all very related and they're problematic. So I think, is that the summary? Does that help answer your question, Rick, about how we came to be? Cool. Thank you for that question. I think I make an assumption that everyone knows all the things. And so we're all at different levels of involvement with this work, it seems like. And so I think it's important not to run past it.
Thanks for that, Liz. And I was going to mention the engrossed second substitute Senate bill 5497, which was the Keep Washington Working legislation that was passed at the state level shortly before this group came to fruition, you know, was really looking at minimizing and eliminating, right, any collaboration between immigration and state agencies to make sure that immigrants were protected and that they weren't going to be mistreated or that they weren't going to be sort of swept up inadvertently during, you know, different acts of collaboration or, you know, oversight. Monica, did you have a question?
Yes. So I think we should talk maybe, which is seems to me connected right now to this topic of immigrants feeling safe, reaching out for help. Maybe we should talk about the defunding police and maybe talk a little bit about if this is going to be happening in our county. Maybe there should be a money or budget proposal that some of the money will go to connect the people who would be connecting us to each groups, because I know there is large Russian community, there is a Muslim community, there is Asian Punjabi, you know, there are, I don't speak all the languages, I can connect with the Eastern European group, and I speak a little bit Russian and obviously fluent Polish, but I don't want to be the person who is going to be, you know, connecting. I want someone from the group to be able to reach out to us, and maybe also the budget would go that the person, you know, collaborate with the police. I don't know. So people feel safe. I don't know if I complicated this question. Basically what I'm thinking is if there will be a budget or some kind of a money that it will be taken away from police defunding idea, that maybe we should address that. I don't know. That's all.
Yeah, and certainly, I mean, it's good to note that the city council will be looking at the budget. So we have a biennial budget that covers 2 years at a time. And this coming, usually it's around October, that the mayor proposes the upcoming biennial budget. And then the city council is the group that ultimately approves that budget. And so, yes, there are intense discussions behind the scenes, and I expect to continue an open session about how to reallocate funds to make sure that things like mental health and different types of, you know, rehabilitation, social services, and, you know, addressing homelessness, and, you know, lots of things that really are at the forefront in saying when people call for help, who responds to that call and what services are they receiving when they call. And so making sure, you know, for me, this group also was a way to really shine a light and provide a voice for what's happening in the community and what I know is happening because of my work as an immigration attorney, but where, you know, city government a lot of times will take the position that, well, we don't hear complaints and we don't, you know, see this firsthand, and so therefore it's not happening, and wanting to make sure that that again that there's action behind the resolutions. I've said before that our city, you know, sort of the progressive Pacific Northwest, does a great job about, you know, writing resolutions that have sort of flowery words about who we aspire to be, but I think your actions really speak to who you are. And so it's making sure, like this group has mentioned, is that there's action behind that. And so when we say this community wants to be welcoming of immigrants, that's fine and good, but if immigrants don't feel safe and welcome here, then those words are meaningless. And so what action as a community do we take to change that narrative and to make sure that people actually do feel safe and welcome here? And so that outreach, you know, piece is going to be key as this group continues. I mean, this is only the second meeting, of making sure that community members know what this group is doing and that they have, you know, avenues to connect with this group and to share stories. And, you know, it's that balance too of wanting to make sure that people are able to engage anonymously when that feels most comfortable, but also hoping to create a space where people feel comfortable providing personal information and details that can actually be followed through on, to make sure that if there are concerns and complaints, that there can be accountability on the part of the city or the police or whoever that particular group is. And obviously those details are needed in order to follow through and do that investigation that's needed. So I digressed, but the reallocation of funds is key. And I think through this board and the connections that each individual here has with the broader community, if there are recommendations that this board would want to make to the council, I think that would be powerful. If they're, you know, in looking at the budget, are there specific things related to the immigrant community in particular that need funding or need to be addressed at a municipal level? I think if this group can create some consensus and bring something forward, I mean, as the liaison and, you know, as a council member, I would be happy to bring that to the broader council for consideration. So.
Right. And in the spirit of, you know, kind of bringing these things forwards and also understanding what defunding the police means, I understand that a lot of people are coming with a lot of different relationships with the police, either from a privileged or not privileged standpoint. And so I'm wondering if, and folks are welcome to respond in the chat just so, you know, we don't totally derail the conversation, but I'm just wondering, for purposes of this group, would having more information about what that would look like or what that would entail, potentially like proposed solutions that other cities have done, some case studies, would that feel energizing or informative for folks to have that information kind of in their back pocket to help make those informed decisions? Or, and you know, we can all be on a spectrum in terms of like, I feel comfortable, but not that comfortable, or I don't know anything about this topic, or I've lived, eat, breathe this topic for the past, you know, 40 years. I don't want the police. I'm a police abolitionist. I think that we have a wide spectrum of views here. And so I'm wondering, I'm totally happy to put together some informational materials for y'all. I have a free online class that I've started in the wake of all of this going on. So if anyone needs resources, I'm happy to provide those. But I'm wondering, as we start to talk about these really tangible decisions, what information would feel helpful or energizing for folks to have in making those decisions? And again, you can totally take time to reflect and process on that, and either reflect and process out loud in the chat or with each other or via email. Whatever would feel most comfortable. But I did just want to offer up that question in terms of, you know, I know there are quite a few of us in this room, myself included, who totally agree and who see that as a very, you know, empowering and liberating experience of, you know, yes, let's reallocate these funds, let's do these things. And I understand that, you know, we are socialized to rely on the police, and it is very hard to unlearn and kind of see examples of other cities that have kind of done this. And so I do want to provide kind of those resources should folks need them, or data that they'd like to see. I know, you know, that's a big value here that we've heard. So yeah, feel free to process out loud in the chat, via email, whatever would feel most comfortable for you all.
Thanks, Katie.
Yeah, Bridget.
Oh yeah, thanks. Katie, thank you for that offer. I think that that would be great if there's things that you could provide. At least on my end, I would appreciate that. And so I can't speak for everyone, but for myself. And then I also just wanted to mention, Liz, thank you for that context as well, a bit more of that. That was helpful, hearing a bit of kind of like the background and some of that conversation that has happened. And I think too, like we, as like each one of us with our own experience and understanding, I think one of the things that comes up as we talk about research or outreach and that sort of thing, not to get us off track from what we were just talking about, but I would love to put forward that I think it would be real, like it sounds like there are you can just say, I think that there are some people in the group that know a lot about farm workers and the rights there and what needs to be fought for, and within our own community here in Bellingham and Whatcom County. And I think that that's really important. And I think that it would be great for this group to highlight other voices as well, in addition, not to shadow those voices by any means. We need to fight and do work there and do action there. And I think it would be great to do some outreach to some other immigrant communities in Bellingham and Whatcom County to hear also from them what may need to happen. And so I want to honor the spirit of what this group was created in and all the energy and the action and all the work that everyone did to get this group to where it is today. And I think that in that same spirit of things, I think we can vision out even more for that. And so I think that, and I don't want to put this on you, Katie, so this isn't like a request for research from you specifically, but I think that as part of the group too, I think it would be great if we researched out or found resources or people that we could invite or places where we could learn more from all communities and in Bellingham, all immigrant communities. And I don't quite know what that would look like. I know that with the, and maybe this is a conversation, but just learning about the non-hierarchical approach, if there's, if like somebody would just like take that on and say, hey, I'll start that, I'll spearhead, I'll create a Google Doc and start creating that list. And then we can decide kind of where to go from that. Or if there's another way within that structure that would happen. I'm posing this to anyone in the group, but would love to, I'd be happy to be a part of that process, whatever that looks like, if we decide to go forward with that.
Absolutely. And I'm totally willing to send resources, whatever. I'm a research junkie. I love it. It's like what I stay up until 3 a.m. doing all the time. So it's like, it's my guilty pleasure. So yeah, happy to send all of that or any resources that we all kind of collaborate on. And in terms of that hierarchical structure, I know I kind of like started that with the Google Doc. So I'm happy to add in some additional resources as to kind of the justification. There's a really good document kind of about, you know, how hierarchy plays into white supremacist culture. And I think in the spirit of everything going on, kind of being able to unlearn as a group and start to incorporate that into city processes is going to be really important in terms of, again, if we're going to call ourselves a progressive and liberal city, walking the walk of that. Having grown up in, you know, a lot of conservative towns, there's a lot more walking the walk of progressive and liberalism in those towns than there is here. I can kind of speak to that experience directly. And so I think, again, just continuing that momentum is going to be really important. So I'm happy to send resources, happy to collaborate with whoever, and I'll definitely send up some follow-up emails after this meeting, likely tomorrow.
Thanks, Katie. Real quick, sorry, Monica.
Okay.
I know that Liz's mic had come off as well. Did you want to respond to or not? I had one thing to say, but if...
Go ahead, Hannah.
Okay. So I too, I mean, as an immigration attorney and realizing how many different cultures and how diverse, in fact, our community is something that I want this group to, you know, explore, and I want that to come to light. At the same time, I also want this group to be very mindful of the fact that one of the right larger immigrant populations here are Latinos and Hispanics, and definitely being people of color, disproportionately negatively impacted in so many ways. And so it's a balance. This is me personally, and I'm not speaking as, I'm not the leader of this group, but as a member of this group, is that balance between wanting to make sure that this group in particular is treated as a priority, because I feel like there is an emergent need, especially right now with COVID-19, and thinking about the individuals who are essential workers. I think I mentioned this during the last meeting, right? That our community is dependent upon to survive and to sort of live the lives we live, but at the same time, not giving the respect and protections and elevation that they deserve as human beings, fellow human beings in our community. And so wanting to make sure that that is a priority for this group, but likewise not wanting the group to be completely dominated by that, where other members of the immigrant community who may not be Latino or Hispanic then don't feel comfortable coming to this group or engaging with this group because they feel like this group is only for farm workers or it's only for Latinos. And so that's a balance. And I hear what you're saying, Bridget, but I'm not directly pushing back. I'm just expressing my own feelings about that balance. So
yeah, and that's mainly what I was hoping to approach as well, is just wanting to make sure that those doors are also open and we continue, and people of color that are not Hispanic or Latino as well. And so making sure that all voices are heard from immigrant communities. And I think that, yeah, I'm going to leave it to Monica.
I just want to follow up with the information that Hannah, that you mentioned, that it's going to be a meeting in October in terms of defunding police. And maybe we can work on suggestions together, one of which, like the first one that comes to my head, is that if there will be police going to immigrant household or responding to immigrant issue or with immigrants, that they would not go alone. There will be somebody else who will be able to go. So there is going to be like the sense of, you know, a person in between, that is not going to be one-on-one. Anyway, I'm addressing this issue because October is not very far really from now. And I think we need some kind of a budget for additional help for each language group that we have in our community. And that's just kind of what's in my mind. Well, it have been for a long time, but anyway, so I just want to address this. And if we can all or individually and as a group think about, you know, how create this question or how to put out this request or, I don't know, subject to the council or to the mayor, that would be great. That's all.
Thank you, Monica.
I also wanted to mention, Monica, sorry, Hannah, the way the ordinance is structured is that our positions are connected to the access that we have to different communities, with the hope that it would be a wide reach, right? So like we have a school teacher, we have pastors, we have people who intersect with the communities in different ways. And I would hope that in our just everyday work that we're letting people know that this is a resource that now exists, that is new to the community. So I think faith communities and school communities and, you know, the mission even, like there's a lot of possibility there for us to be letting people know or meeting with folks in case there are issues that come up, they'll know that this is here. Because I think a lot of people don't go to the City of Bellingham website or they don't go on Facebook. And those are kind of the two loudspeakers for this work, but there's also the opportunity to just get the word out. And I know that Maria has in communities in Skagit and Whatcom County, right? Because of your work and home. And so it's that kind of thing of thinking like, who would maybe need to know about this? And I think we're each individually responsible for the way that we are appointed because of the communities that we can support and advocate for.
Thanks, Liz. Ada?
Sorry, okay. I just wanted to add real quick that I think a possible thing to think about coming up into the school year is just what that's gonna look like with COVID for, especially for families that are looking at whether they're bringing their kid back to school, whether they're essential workers and they don't have necessarily English as a first language. I imagine all kinds of issues coming up. So just to maybe keep our feelers out to the school age population to see what they're dealing with as far as that.
Thank you. No, it's a good point. The school is a great resource as well and does tremendous outreach with community and in particular members of the immigrant community. So we'll make sure to loop in with them as well. We have 30 minutes left and I wanna make sure, so going forward, I'll track down agenda items for the future as far as communication and outreach and maybe budget items, thinking about how to reallocate resources and what's needed to bring that action forward. But the other big discussion item for tonight is about the federal contacts review and the report that was sent out with the agenda, as well as discussion and questions about data collection. And so ideally I'd like to use this time maybe, unless there's something about the data specifically that stood out to people, we can certainly discuss what was presented, but it sounds like there needs to be a broader conversation about what type of data we're actually receiving. And so I'd like to open that up to the group for further discussion just about the data collection process and maybe the source of that data or broader questions and research that people would like to see. Marisol and Ramon, John, I'm gonna call you out just to see if you had anything, any questions or future requests related to data.
No, pues la verdad, pues todo lo que estaba escuchando me parece muy bien y ahorita no tengo preguntas, todo bien para mí.
No, we don't have questions right now. As of right now, everything that we're listening to sounds good.
Okay, thank you. Other members of the group have feedback. I'm gonna ask if, let's see, Danielle, Rick,
Maria.
I know, Maria. Have comments or feedback?
I'm curious, from the data that we're receiving, the police calls and so forth, what is the connection? I guess I'm not getting that piece. Information is good. I appreciate the spectrum that it covers, but I'm not sure how it connects back to what we're talking about. So maybe if somebody could help me with that, that would be great.
So part of through the state legislature and the action taken here in Washington was again to try and separate work done by the federal agencies, right? The Department of Homeland Security, Immigration, Customs Enforcement, Customs and Border Patrol, Border Protection, and making sure that local or state agencies aren't collaborating and aren't doing that federal work, and so that they're not working to enforce immigration laws and they're not helping to, you know, to sweep immigrant communities and making sure that access to services here within the state is not dependent upon your immigration status, that you're not going to be asked about that or penalized for that, you know, with respect to state access. And so it's really creating that separation of powers between the federal government and the state government, making sure that the state government's not doing the federal government's work with respect to immigration enforcement, and that those are very separate. And so that's where I spoke to the piece where about enforceability and saying that technically that legislation that was passed at the state level was related to state agencies, and they actually have, you know, finally put together the Keep Washington Working work group, and they've had two meetings. I was going to share that information with the board. The work that they're starting to do, I think, is hopefully something that we can look to for, you know, maybe some guidance or things to build on, but that it doesn't speak directly to municipal level government or agencies. And so technically we're not held accountable under the law with respect to that legislation, but locally here, the city administration has acknowledged that they want and are committed to meeting those same requirements and guidelines that have been outlined. And so sort of raising that bar. And so really that prompted in development of the ordinance to say, well, if we're going to be saying that we're not going to be collaborating with immigration enforcement, then we want to sort of hold ourselves accountable and make sure that we know when there is communication or collaboration, you know, what prompted that and what was the extent of that, so that we can ask those hard questions.
And I wanted to follow up if I can. I think another, yes, that's absolutely what we wanted to do. And looking at this data, which I think should be accessible to the public easily, I think that one of the goals of this group has been like, how can we see what's happening rather than just taking your word for it? And if we're looking on, I saw on July 10th, it says our dispatch, meaning Bellingham Police Department, called Customs and Border Patrol dispatch at the request of the Blaine Police Department to pass along juvenile runaway information. So this immediately reminds me of the individual in our community who I believe was 16, who was pulled over by Bellingham police and ended up being handed over to ICE, detained and transferred to Tacoma without his parents being notified. So when we look at the actual safety of individuals in the community and the things that have happened in the past, those relationships between CBP and Bellingham Police Department, the Blaine Police Department, there's somewhere on here where also, the Customs and Border Patrol provided mutual aid for, where was that one? To provide aid to the Bellingham police of a perimeter, security perimeter. Well, I think, this one's on July 6th. The dispatch telephoned Customs and Border Patrol at the request of Blaine police for perimeter on a residential warrant service. So, you know, these are all nice words, but I think one thing that we asked for last time was, can we have a column that says, what was the outcome of that? Was someone detained? Was someone transferred to CBP? Like those kinds of links. But I think just looking at this document, and it only covers like 3 weeks of time, there is a lot of communication going on between these departments, and that is creating a safety issue. And especially for, luckily in Bellingham, the police having lunch in schools program has been suspended. But those kinds of things where a student will look at a person in a uniform and not know, is that the person who detained my father? You know, as this department, how do I know that this is someone I can go to for help because they're working together? So I think that a large part of our job is to shine a light publicly on this, that they aren't really separate. The risk that a Bellingham police officer poses to an undocumented person is the same as the risk that a CBP officer poses to an undocumented person, because they are sharing so much of the work that they're doing. So I don't know if that is making sense, but when I'm looking at this data, it just seems like in a 3 week time for there to be so many different times where they did each other's work, essentially is what it looks like, is a problem. And I think what our committee needs to figure out, how can we make a recommendation that would strengthen the safety of the people who are being passed back and forth between departments.
Right, and I think on top of that, you know, echoing the importance of accountability and also understanding, you know, the relationship between Bellingham Police and Border Control a little bit better. I do work up in Blaine, one of my many jobs is a server. And so as a food service worker at one point, you know, having to notify the police of illegal activity of somebody attempting to break into a car and having Border Patrol can respond rather than the City of Plain Police Department. I think that's a very important to understand in terms of what is the actual mechanism in terms of how people respond. And, you know, I do want to give some room for grace and compassion and understanding that, you know, the Blaine Police Department is very small and they are very close to the border. And so understanding that when that's dispatched, perhaps there is some overlap, but also understanding that for that situation, it was really grossly inappropriate and it ended up being a 4-hour ordeal rather than something that could have simply been, you know, kind of just, you know, hey, don't break into somebody's car. Pretty simple. Yeah, so I think it's just also trying to echo that accountability and also better understanding the relationship between those departments, because I do think even, you know, in the most visible and the most, you know, accessible forms of public office, there is that lack of sense in terms of knowing, you know, what really is going on here in terms of, you know, how all of these mechanisms are working together. And so I think our board can really serve to do that specifically through data. So I think, again, to elevate what Liz is saying and what others have said in this group in terms of understanding not only what was the outcome, but in totally like accessible and honest terms, what was the dispatch really about? Because I think as a group, we either need to norm around kind of the nomenclature that's used amongst law enforcement to understand what people are being dispatched for, or we need to request that this data be put in more accessible language, because I think there are pretty general buckets that things get put into, and we lose a lot of nuance with that and understanding what actually happened with the altercation in terms of being able to understand as a group, was it justified or wasn't it justified? And it's not a binary, it has a lot of gray area and it's a spectrum. But without that nuance, if we're just going to bucket it into 5 different categories, we're really going to lose out on a lot of that. And so if there is a way to do that, that would be incredibly helpful. And I know that that does, you know, require a lot of cooperation from a lot of different stakeholders, which I know is difficult. And but again, you know, to come back to one of Liz's comments earlier in the meeting about, you know, this is kind of going to be maybe a slow process in terms of capturing all of the nuance, which I think is really important. So if that is possible, that is one of the requests that I personally have of the data in terms of being able to discern really what's going on, because it seems like right now it is so general that we can't do anything with it. It's a good start in terms of data collection. I want to honor the work that's gone into that. And moving forward, we're going to need to have a lot of different layers because this is a really layered issue.
Wanted to highlight. There's a public comment from Tally Jones in the comments for people who haven't seen it. And also, when I talked to Brian Heinrich, am I saying that right? Heinrich, the city attorney.
Heinrich. So Brian Heinrich is actually in the mayor's office, okay. Peter Raffato's in the attorney's office.
Oh, sorry about that.
No.
Anyway, Brian and I had a phone call, and he has committed to doing a lot of this sort of like connecting the dots for us, but wasn't able to get it done in time for this meeting. But like the question about the Sehorn Hill Tower, the question about how frequently does the Department of Justice communicate with the city and what are the results of those? He was going to do a public disclosure request with the mayor's office and try to figure out. So we have more of this information to look at, like, are we really, because a lot of what we've heard is like, there's no interaction, you know, we want to, that would be amazing. If we could get this data for a 3-week period down to 0 interactions, I think that would be, we're doing a really good thing for public safety. So right now it's a lot, too many, I would say, but I think Brian is going to help us understand more pieces of that puzzle for the next meeting.
Thanks, Liz. And I think what Katie brought up too is a reminded me about just the resource allocation piece, and I feel like involvement as a border community with Department of Homeland Security agencies has sort of been a default because it's been easy. Like, we don't have a lot of money, we don't have a lot of resources, and they're here, so they can provide interpretation or they can provide backup. And so really looking at, was there a lack of resource that prompted that engagement? And if so, when you're talking about budget, right, and reallocating resources to make sure that community members feel safe, if there are certain shortages that are creating, you know, or necessitating, the city may say, those relationships, then those need to be addressed. But that information is not provided in the data that we're seeing right now. So all good points.
I have a question to Hannah and maybe Liz, if you are aware. If, as far as I understand, there at least several years ago, we had several different private, not border patrol, but security groups. Are you aware if we have just one, or there is more, and how many, and how they collaborate? Do they share information with whom, and do we even get any info from them because they private, so who they connect with? So that's kind of, I don't know if Hannah or Liz is aware of about that.
So, I mean, that would be another broad discussion about all of those agencies and the presence in our community, right, as far as the different agencies that are present, as well as the number of officers and their different officers and agents and their role. But I think that would be certainly worthy of discussion at another meeting. So I'll add that to our list of future agenda items.
Yeah, so if we can find out or put a question out there, how many Border Patrol private groups we have, how do they look like, who they cooperate with, are they connected with police, are they connected with Border Patrol, are they connected to
right
who knows what, and right. If we can get a data on it, maybe how they look like, what cars they because they're from what I remember from the past, there was like at least five different groups. Anyway, that's all.
Sort
thank
of like
you.
Right. Vigilante type groups.
Yeah. Totally. And just do you mind if I jump in just for like
60
seconds? Okay. And just again, in the spirit of making sure that folks are on the same page and also respecting that we all are in kind of different places and understanding what defunding the police and police abolition really means, this is a point that I would normally save for kind of more of a document released at the end of the meeting, but if for the spirit of kind of nuanced conversation and understanding this, the importance of kind of understanding the, and again, this might be overkill for a lot of people in the group, so I apologize if I'm stating the obvious, but the importance of understanding the cooperation between all of these is, if a discussion arises of defunding the police, it's a question of, are we getting to the root of the problem, or are we just passing it off to now instead all these other privatized agencies or Homeland Security or Border Control will now be dispatched to these situations? Or is it a question of, do we defund these systems entirely to then allow for restorative justice to take place? And so it's kind of the difference between reducing funding, eliminating funding, or reallocating funding, and a mixture of all of those in terms of understanding the very intricate relationships that exist between the multiple policing systems that have proven to perhaps be effective in some ways, but holistically ineffective when we actually look at what we mean in terms of what we want to achieve with justice as, you know, kind of a society, and also looking that in the context of faith, what we want to achieve is justice as it's understood in multiple faiths, as well as what it means in the context of being a progressive liberal town, and what that means in terms of like your personal idea of what that justice looks like. And so understanding these relationships is really important, and that's a part of the resources that I can pass out as well in terms of looking at, you know, does defunding the police mean that just these other agencies are going to step in and do the exact same amount of harm, or are there different policies that we can put in place that kind of prevent this harm from occurring in the first place?
Thanks, Katie. Maria, I'm gonna call on you to see if, as our time wraps up tonight, if I know you've been listening, but if there's anything you wanted to add to the conversation.
No, at the moment.
Okay.
Thank you for asking.
Yeah, no worries. And I also wanted to check in with the attendees, if people could raise their hands if they have interest in speaking or providing any public comment before the close of our meeting tonight so that we can do a tally of numbers. And so we have lots of questions, I mean, for more information on the data. And I think this will just continue to grow, right? I mean, we're gonna make a request then out to the city of saying, this is a great start. We're happy that you've expressed that you're willing to share this information. And now, you know, based on the information we've received, these are the gaps and holes. And so I would propose trying to put together, you know, a list of what those questions and gaps are and sharing that with the group to get feedback, just to make sure that obviously it can change over time and we can continue to ask questions, but for a first go around to sort of present something back to Brian Heinrich, in particular in the mayor's office, who's helping to compile this information. But I think definitely that sort of what happened and final outcome is critical. And then also if there are requests, obviously we're talking about the city of Bellingham, but it gets muddy quickly, right? Because if Blaine PD is making a request from Bellingham PD and then they show up and they're, you know, municipal government may not have the same policies in place as far as drawing those separations. And so they show up and then, you know, maybe it morphs from there, but wanting to see, what happens. And yes, Liz.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I wanted to just put on your radar for the list of questions. What are the federal funding mechanisms in the city of Bellingham and how are they connected to conditionality? I know the city of Bellingham itself requires the I-9, which is the documentation that led to the last ICE raid in 2018. So, even though it's, my understanding is it's not legally required, there are certain grants, like the Opportunity Council has a grant from the government that requires them to do this I-9 audit of their employees. So that's a justice issue that we need to look at, is that a person without status is unsafe in that situation. And that's how the Granite precast raid happened, because of an I-9 audit. So again, just looking at what historically, you know, and starting really recently, you know, that wasn't very long ago, and going back, you know, 15 years of those relationships and the funding. I know the city of Bellingham had a federal grant that was had some conditionality, and that grant, according to Brian, is no longer accepted by the city. So in terms of reallocating funds, also looking at if people are getting paid to do this through other mechanisms like the I-9 audit, that's also something we should be aware of for next time.
I don't see any hands raised from attendees, but I am thankful that people tuned in to listen tonight. And I wanna give some time in the last 5 or so minutes if there are other members of the board who have any old or new business or final thoughts of things that they want to share before we close tonight.
Was there a decision as to, Hannah, were you going to put together that, or just grab all of the thoughts around the data that is needed and send that on to Brian, or was there a decision who was doing that?
So I think between just based on the discussions tonight, going back through those notes to compile a list, and can reach out to the other board members collectively, all of us to sort of build one list together that then can be sent to Brian so that he's not receiving lots of different messages from everybody, that we can make that as concise as possible.
Great.
And then I saw that Kai has raised their hand on the attendee list. So if Millie's able to provide Kai with an opportunity to open their mic, that would be great.
Kai, you now have the ability to speak if you want to go ahead and unmute yourself. You can speak with us now.
Thank you. I just wanted to be brief. I am a community member, not necessarily coming forth as an immigrant for that view, but I come with the work that I try to do in trying to advocate for the homeless community and the immigrant community. And I just want to, you know, applaud different members for talking about these issues, including defunding the police and expanding on the systems that are at place, and about the anyway, I'm new to this kind of meeting, but thank you for your work. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Kai, and I want to thank you as well for your advocacy and outreach. And I just want to assure you that your emails and phone calls are all received. I'm not going to make excuses for how full my email box is, but I want to make sure that people know if you ever reach out that I do read everything. I don't unfortunately get an opportunity to respond as quickly as I would like to everything that comes in, but the community involvement here is exceptional, and I just want to encourage people to continue to stay engaged in speaking up on these important issues. So thank you, Kai. Any other attendees want to speak?
Do we want to read Tally's comment, as it's only available to panelists, so maybe make that public for everyone?
Yeah, I didn't realize that. That's a very good point that not everyone could see that. And I know Liz had mentioned that Tally had posted before departing the meeting. And so the comment had said, I can't make public comment at the end of this meeting, but I'd like to say that I fully agree with Liz that public access to the police CBC records is important, and also feel knowing that outcome of the interaction is essential. Thank you. So, yes.
Millie or Janice, does somebody save this chat as part of the public record? Because I know that's an option with Zoom.
It is not actually saved, which is why I mentioned that we should try to do the document sharing as much as possible and the and just speak when these comments are made in the chat. So
good to know. I learned something new again. So another reason why we'll be asking Katie to share that link via email, since it will disappear with the close of this meeting. Any final thoughts or comments tonight?
Just a quick question. Did we have the conclusion on the open meeting training, what we're going to do with that? I might have missed what we concluded to do.
So I think the proposal is to try and arrange that not during our monthly meeting, but during an off time. And I think we could provide some options to people of having a time when we could do it collectively, and those who are available to attend, we could walk through that together, but then providing the link and information so people can do that individually on their own as well if they're not able to attend, but then making sure that we have time and space during the next meeting if there are questions that board members had after completing that training.
Okay, I kind of looked, Peter had sent out a link, so I looked at it. It seemed like I got into a cycle and went around in circles. So, but that's my life right now anyway. So I'm not sure if I was missing something. So how will we decide? Looks like a 45-minute process. So,
yeah, it was the video itself, I think, is 30 or 45 minutes. And then there's a slideshow or a PowerPoint presentation that could be done in the alternative. So depending on people's preference, if they'd prefer to watch the video or if they'd rather go through the slides more quickly, depending on people's experience or familiarity with the content. So I think we'll make both available, but it's probably one of those things that what I would like to do is to make that information available again, request that people do that on their own, but also provide a time to do that, you know, in a group, whether that's small or large, if people want that extra support to navigate that content. So that'll be coming forward via email. But thanks for the question and clarification, because I was not clear earlier. And then we will need to roll the dice or throw a dart at a board or something to pick the next facilitator, right? I think there was consensus on that it would not be me, which I am not offended by, and I'm excited and welcome for the opportunity to listen a lot more. And to make sure people know as well, I mean, with those appointments, obviously someone's appointment to the board could be extended or renewed, but obviously for that initial appointment period, I think like Liz said, I can go through the list and confirm which board members were initially appointed for a one-year term, and have those look at those names and then reach out to those individuals and see who's comfortable. Like Liz said, some people may not be comfortable or want to take on facilitating a meeting, and some may, but at least to have that opportunity across the board, I think is really key in building community within this group as well. So, okay, anything else? Oh, so another chat from Jackie. It says, I'm also a community member and wanted to echo what folks have said regarding the collaboration between the police, CBP, and Homeland Security, and working to defund the police and reallocate those funds. Yep. Great. Thank you for that, Jackie. Okay. Any further questions or comments tonight? No? Okay. Well, thank you all very, very much for your time and commitment to this board and the hard work to come. And I look forward to us reconvening. Again, I will send out, we'll finalize that official next date and the sequence of, you know, future meetings, whether that's the first, second, or third Tuesday, but it will be on a Tuesday. So, and around the same time, 6 to 8. Okay. Okay. Thank you guys so much. I hope you all stay safe and healthy, and I will see you soon. Have a good night.
Good night, guys.
Good night.